after asking Brother George to continue his studies. Brother George.
Brother Chairman, my dear brethren and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ. In chapter 27 of Genesis here, we have illustrated for us the weakness of the flesh. And we indeed have it set forth in all the characters within that chapter. And we see, brethren and sisters, from the outline of this situation here, that salvation is indeed of Yahweh and none else. We're introduced to Isaac. He is elderly, at least 100 years of age at this time. He thinks he's going to die. He's ill. He must be very ill. And his eyesight has gone. We see this weak old man now imagining that death stares him in the face, when in actual fact he did revive. And it was the acknowledgement of the Father's power and his purpose that caused that man to tremble and revive from that sickness. And so we see a situation here of weakness. In Rebecca, we see a woman who is desperate and she panics. We see the motives and the goals of Rebecca and Jacob as being the most pious. Brethren and sisters, their goals and the motive force behind Rebecca and Jacob, I believe that they were most noble. But I believe that the means that they employed, the ways and the means that they employed, though their principles were the highest, though the ideas they had in mind were exalted, the ways and means employed scarred them for the rest of their lives. And so often we can do this in our zeal for the things of the truth, brethren and sisters. We can employ ways and means that tend to deny the very things we're trying to establish. And that's the tremendous lesson that comes out in this book. They were indeed governed by faith, but a little faith, and it needed to grow. And they needed to appreciate their weaknesses, and therefore the Father allowed the full outworkings of this situation, that all might see the nature they bore, especially Esau. And so we see the senses of Isaac revealed to us. His eyes were dim. He was governed by the taste of the food, the smell of Esau's garments, the feel and the hearing. And here's a chapter that introduces us to the weakness of the flesh. And so as we go down into verse 3, we see this elderly, faithful man, Isaac. We must never give up the fight, brethren and sisters, against our nature. It doesn't matter how long we've been in the truth, whatever our situation might be in the truth, and I believe we see that being brought out very graphically in verse 3. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver and thy bow, and go out into the world and take me some venison. See, Isaac had received of the good things of this world at the hands of Esau. And he'd let Esau know that he appreciated the good things that Esau brought him from the world outside. And it was a bad thing that Isaac had done that. He should have rebuked Esau. And though it would have been hard, he should have let his son know that he didn't want the good things of the world. But in the weakness of his nature, and the affection he had for his son, as so often we can do, brethren and sisters, we will give our children the wrong impression of things. And we will accept things from them. We will accept habits and actions from them that we ought to condemn. And because he'd accepted these things from Esau's hand, that he got from the world, away from the ecclesia, away from the household, we find him here now saying to his son, go out into the world It's the only way Esau, the only place Esau could go to get anything. And take me savoury meat such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat and my soul may bless thee before I die. See, what Isaac's doing here is he's overlooking a fundamental principle of the truth. And that is, brethren and sisters, that the flock that was in that household was just as desirable to eat as the venison outside. Because when the kids of his own flock were prepared for him, he could not tell the difference. But here's old Isaac saying, I desire to taste those things that you get from the wilds. And he was failing to recognize in his weakness that there's a beautiful taste comes from that word. And it's far better than anything that the world can provide. He's weak. And so is Rebecca, because she hears this and she sees the weakness of her husband. She knows what Esau's like. And she starts to panic. And I believe for a moment, though her motives are of the highest, she wants that blessing for Jacob. God promised that Jacob would get it, and she sees that Esau's not worthy of the things of the truth. He's playing havoc with the ecclesia. And we've got to do something about stopping him in our midst. And we can feel like at this at times, brethren and sisters, we can see Esau characteristics in the ecclesia. And we start to panic. We've got to stop this. They'll destroy the ecclesia. And if we're not careful, we can forget the Father. And we can forget the way the Father wants us to work. And that he allows these within our midst to try us. And she was forgetting these things and she panicked. Because it was a dangerous situation. They can play havoc with the things of God. And so she heard it. And we read in verse 5. In verse 6, she said to Jacob her son, Behold, I've heard your father speak unto Esau, saying, Bring me venison, make us savoury meat that I may eat, and bless thee before Yahweh. He's going to pray to the Father in the heavens. He's going to give himself in prayer and ask the Father to endorse what he's doing. Look, we're in a terrible situation, Jacob. We've got to do something about this. Obey my voice. Do as I command thee. Go out into the flock. Fetch me two kids of the goats. Bring them in. I'll make the savoury meat such as your father loves. I know what his weaknesses are. I know exactly what they're like. And I'll give him something that he will love. And it will tickle his palate. He'll like it. And we'll get him into that frame of mind that Esau gets him into. And we'll extract the blessing from him. See, she's panicking here. And she's thrown on her own resources, brethren and sisters. As so often we are in ecclesial difficulties and ecclesial life. And the motives may be the highest. But in a moment of weakness, we start to panic and we run around in circles. And I've done this so often myself. And the further you run, the more you panic, the worse you get yourself. And so she sends a son out to get two kids of the goats. And even in the aspect of sending him out here to get two, I think there's the idea of the double portion. She's got that in mind. The double portion that Jacob is to inherit, but Esau looks like he's taking here. Probably the two was needed to make up the volume of the venison that Esau would bring in. He always brought in the lavish gifts. The simple things of the truth. Esau knew that the big things the flesh took notice of. Probably the two may indirectly represent a covering for Rebekah and Jacob. And in all these things we see them trying to uphold the things of the truth. But in a moment of panic, they're denying certain fundamental principles in the things that they're doing. And whatever the reasons behind this, Yahweh could never approve the things that they were doing in their endeavour to extract this blessing. They were panicking, and they'd for a moment forgotten that the Father had complete control over all the things that were taking place. But see, even in sending Jacob out to the flock, she was sending him out to select an offering that Yahweh would accept. Because when the law was given to Israel, The father asks for the offerings to come from their flock. Something from their own hands, not from the wilds. Something that you've got to sacrifice. That's the sacrifice. So in this panic, you see them even setting forth these principles out of their own flock. And out come these two kids. They're sacrificed. They're prepared. And so she informs Jacob there in verse 10 that he is to take this into the father. But Jacob can see the dangers in the situation. He can see that this isn't quite right. And he says, but mother, my brother's hairy and I'm smooth. When I go in, Dad will feel me and I'll seem to be a deceiver. And I'll bring a curse upon myself. You know, this is not right, what we're doing. You know, you can see Jacob here uneasy about the situation. But again, Rebekah says in verse 13, upon me be the curse, my son. Do as I tell you. You know, there's the character of Rebekah coming out. Do as I'm telling you. We've got to do something. We can't mess around. This is a situation that is electric. Do it, my son. I'll take the curse. And she did. She took the curse, all right. And when the workings of this situation had finished, brethren and sisters, she never saw her son again. She'll see him at the judgment. But she never saw her son again. And so often we can panic in a situation. And we can forget that the Father's still got control of everything. And when it gets beyond our control, he'll show us just how much control he's got over everything. But so often, with the highest of motives, we will use the wrong means of establishing a cause, and we'll bear the scars of that for a long time to come. She didn't know what she was saying in verse 13, but she knew it later on. And so in verse 14, he went and fetched and brought them to his mother. And his mother made savoury meat such as his father loved. Verse 15, Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. The elder son's garments placed on the younger son. Now here was Esau's garment in the house. It was a goodly raiment. Now I believe it was a special raiment. It was probably the sort of garment that Jacob made for Joseph, that designated Esau as the firstborn. It was probably the sort of covering he would put on when they met together to discuss the things of the word, probably to designate him as the firstborn, whom later on was regarded as the priest in the family. And she took this garment of Esau's and she clothed her younger son in that garment. And we see the elder and the younger mentioned in this verse. And no doubt she's got in mind those words that were given to her when they were wrestling in a womb. The elder shall serve the younger. And she's going to do her utmost to make this a reality. And so in verse 16, she puts the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck. She takes the skins of the animals. Here they are. They've sacrificed kids that this meal might take place. They now take the skins of these kids and she places it on the neck and the hands of a son. The neck that's mentioned so often throughout the history of Israel, that stiff neck of Israel that would not bow and humble itself, and the hands of those that lacked faith, that were not accomplishing the works of the Father. And she covers him. She may have had in mind principles of Genesis 3, verse 21, where Adam and Eve were covered by the skins of the animal that was sacrificed. But whatever it was, we see developing here the panic in this woman. We see Jacob following the direction of his mother. He doesn't like what's going on. He wants the blessing. He wants eternal things. He wants to be in the kingdom. He can see what Esau's like, and he's cooperating together with his mother. And it's a terrible situation that's developing here. There's old Isaac, encompassed about with weakness. There's his wife, can see that. Why didn't she go to her husband when Esau left the house or the tent? Why didn't she go up to her husband and say, look, we're in a terrible situation. You're weak, you're not well, you're not thinking correctly, Isaac. Let's discuss these things. Don't you remember the promises? Look at Esau's life. Why didn't she go to him and discuss it? He was a lovely man, amenable to the truth. But no doubt his weaknesses shone out dominant in her mind. And no doubt the fact that she was a dominant sort of a woman. There was a little bit of friction going on here. And there was not the cooperation needed between husband and wife. Brethren and sisters, can so often happen. So often happen. If only they'd have got together and discussed these things. Eventually they did. And they learned a bitter lesson from this, and out of it all, it's preparing them for the kingdom. And that's why the Father allowed it to continue. And he allows things to go wrong in our life. With all of our zeal and our earnestness for the things of the truth, we can do things that are wrong, and the Father allows us to do it, that we might see that left to ourselves, we will always get ourselves into a mess. I well remember a young brother coming to me many years ago, and he broke down in my lounge because I was asked to have a little talk with him. And he said, I know what you're going to say. And he sobbed, and he was a man. He was a lot bigger than me, and a very strong young man. But he broke down and sobbed. He said, I prayed earnestly to God that he might reveal to me that whether what I was doing was right or not. He could see things wrong within the ecclesia. And he went about rectifying those things in his own way, in the vigour of youth. And he caused an uproar within the ecclesia because he lacked that maturity that comes with experience and age. And he said to me, I prayed earnestly to God that he might show me whether I was wrong or not. And he said, he has, after I did it. And I didn't have to say a word to him, brethren and sisters. He sobbed in my lounge. And I got a tremendous exhortation from that young man. And we see this time and time again. The Father will allow us in our foolishness to do things that are wrong and to make a mess of our lives, but then he will save us out of it. And we're caused time and time again to recognize that salvation is not of the flesh, it's of the Father. And here's this situation developing here as we go through this chapter. Verse 19. Jacob comes into his father, and you can imagine the guilt in this young man's mind as he comes in. He's uneasy, he's already expressed that. And he comes in before his father wanting the divine blessing. He wants to be in the kingdom. He wants to uphold the things of the Lord Jesus Christ, and he's uneasy. His conscience is not right as he comes into his father in verse 19. And Jacob said to him, and he said to his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. That was a lie. And he must have felt so uneasy as he said that. I am Esau, thy firstborn. And he must have changed his voice somewhat to try and imitate the sound of Esau's voice. But it wasn't sufficient, because Isaac picked it up. But you can imagine the uneasiness, brethren and sisters. You know, I think we've all been forced at some time or another to either exhibit a lie, if not to say a lie, to sort of live a lie, to impersonate a half-truth, to cover our pride. And here we see him uneasy. I'm Esau. You know, and with this frame of mind and the things that he was doing, he was imitating Esau a little. He was imitating that deceiver. But he didn't do it for long. And when it was pointed out to him, he humbled himself and he bore the memory of that for the rest of his life. And they're the sorts of people, like you and I, that the Father's calling to the kingdom. Men and women that are prepared to face up to their failures and to see that they're prone to err. And when they have them pointed out to them, they battle with them for the rest of their lives. There's the sort of men and women that is being portrayed here in the life of this man Jacob. Verse 20. Isaac said unto his son, "How is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son?" And he said, "Because Yahweh your God brought it to me." See, Isaac wondered. Something's going wrong here. Esau got this very quickly. How did you get it so quickly, my... Yahweh gave it to me. He's quite right, Yahweh did. In the flock. But Yahweh never intended the gifts that were given to him to be used in this manner. So you see, he's right in what he's saying. But the way he says it to his father is wrong. Because it gives his father the wrong idea and implies that the father blesses the works of Esau. That's what the implication is. Jacob's implying to Isaac that God blesses Esau's works. You see, you can be trapped into an awkward position through weakness. And how that would have smote Jacob as he said that. He knew that everything about Esau was contrary to the truth. And Yahweh won't bless a man like that. And yet he's forced into the position through weakness to say, "Yes, God's blessed Esau." And Isaac said unto Jacob, "Well, come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not." And Jacob went near unto his father. You can imagine his feelings as he comes over to this old man of faith. But he knows he's weak and he knows he can't see. So he's got to be careful what he does and says in order to maintain this deception. And he's being brought into a situation that's dangerous and electric. And that's what happens, brethren and sisters, through the weakness of the flesh. You know, how he would have loved to have gone up to his father and embraced his father and spoken to his father on the things of the word, but he's got to come up very carefully because of the means that he's employing at this time. And that can happen to any one of us. And so he comes up to his father. Verse 23, "And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy, and that his father ran his hands over his hands." The works. As far as Isaac was concerned, the works here were the works of Esau. And he blessed him. You know, it's a terrible situation when we consider it, brethren and sisters. And you can imagine that Jacob didn't enjoy the things that were going on at this particular time. He would have been very, very nervous at all these things that were transpiring, and the Father in the heavens was watching every move. He knew what Isaac was like, and the Father had control of that. He knew what Jacob was like, he knew what Rebekah was like, and he knew what that character out there was like too. And he had the whole scene under his control, even as he does in ecclesial life. And so in verse 25, he said, "Bring it near to me, and I will eat my son's venison, that my soul may bless thee." And he brought it near, and he did eat, and he brought him wine and bread. Now here's a sacrificial meal. Here's the animals that have been sacrificed. Here's bread and wine. The principles of the covenant. Sacrifice and fellowship. You know, and here's Isaac thinking that he's in fellowship with Esau. And he's going to assure Esau of blessings that will take him into the kingdom. See, Isaac's sick. And there's Jacob impersonating Esau and thinking that if he acts like Esau, he'll get the kingdom. You see, they're weak. Verse 26. His father Isaac said unto him, "Come near and kiss me, my son." And he came near and kissed him. And he smelled the smell of his raiment and blessed him and said, "See?" No, brethren and sisters, he couldn't see. He couldn't see. His eyes were dim, verse 1. And his spiritual perception was dim also. He couldn't see, but he thought he could. See, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field, which Yahweh hath blessed. Therefore, God, give thee of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee, nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. Now, I believe here that Isaac probably purposely delayed. The very fact that he sent Esau out to get the venison. He wanted to do a certain thing. He'd set his mind up that he was going to bless Esau. He'd made his mind up. But he delays and he allows a passage of time to make sure that the father will condone what he's doing. Just as we might determine to do something and then pray to God that he might indicate to us whether we're right or wrong. But we've already made up our mind we're going to do it. And quite often we can be trapped into this situation, brethren and sisters. I've prayed earnestly about this, and there's been no indication to me that it's wrong, so I'll go ahead and do it, because you wanted to do it before you started praying. And the flesh can do that, can think like that. And he'd given time for things to happen. And so you see an excitement in Isaac in verses 25 to 28. He's excited. Verse 29. He thinks that Yahweh condones it. So he says, come near, son. Embrace me. May God give you the kingdom. Corn and wine and blessings. Isn't this marvellous that God condones my attitude towards you? What a shock Isaac was in for when he realised what he was saying. See, the dew here in Isaiah 26 represents resurrection. The manna appeared under the dew, the bread of life. And he's promising here to what he thinks is Esau, life, the word, resurrection, fatness of the earth. This is fruit. This is fruit to the glory of God, fatness of the earth, corn and wine, bread and wine. The principles of Christ's covenant, which he'll eat and drink anew in the kingdom with his brethren. And Isaac's excited now because the one he loves is endorsed by the Father, and he's going to be blessed. But Jacob's not too happy, because I believe that Jacob would have been uneasy about all this and not wanting to hear what was going on. He wanted the kingdom. He wanted the assurance of being in the kingdom, but his conscience is smitten, brethren and sisters, by everything that's going on. And he looks out that tent door and he can see Esau coming. That's strange. Esau found game very quickly. Now, God could have delayed it if he wished. God could have caused the game to be away from Esau, and it could have taken Esau 2 days to go and get that game. But the father had made sure that Esau got his venison in exactly the right time that would give him to prepare for it and come back just as Jacob was about to leave his father's presence. And you can imagine Jacob's feelings as we pick up the excitement there in verse 30. It came to pass as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was scarce out of his presence, that Esau, his brother, came in from hunting. It reminds you of their birth. There's Esau a little way in front of Jacob, and Jacob grabs his heel and holds on. And Esau's just that little way in front. And now Jacob's uneasy now, and Jacob's just that little way in front of Esau. He's not far in front. But he stays in front from here on, because the father makes sure he does. Because he's worthy of it. And he was humble enough to see these things. But you can imagine his feelings as he sees his brother coming. And he knows the deception. And oh, to be caught in his father's presence with Esau there. And Esau reveals all this to his father. Imagine the feelings of Isaac towards Jacob. And God's got control of everything. So that in verse 32... well, Esau comes in verse 31. He'd made savoury meat, brought it unto his father, and said to his father, let my father arise and eat his son's venison, that thy soul may bless thee. See, Esau's excited now. He wants the blessing. He's already sold the birthright and he's not worthy of it. But he wants the blessing. Do you know why? You go back and have a look at chapter 26. This is why Esau wants the blessing. Verse 12. Isaac sowed in that land and received in the same year a hundredfold, and Yahweh blessed him. Verse 13. And the man Isaac waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great. He had possessions of flocks, possessions of herds, and great store of servants. And the Philistines envied him, and Esau saw all these temporal things in the possession of his father, and he wanted them. And he was going to do anything to get them, and he was going to capitalize on his father's weakness to get these blessings. But the father would never give him the blessings that Isaac had in store for him. They were not now. The blessings of Isaac were in the future, in the kingdom. But you can see why Esau was so excited. He looks like he's got everything under his control. So that in verse 32, we read these words. Isaac his father said unto him, "Who art thou?" And he said, "I'm thy son, thy firstborn." I'm the one in first place. I'm the firstborn. I was the one born first. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, "Who? Who? Where is he that has taken venison and brought it to me, and I've eaten all before you came in, and I've blessed him, and yea, he will be blessed." And there's the character of Isaac coming out. I believe he prayed earnestly to the Father to confirm that blessing. You see this brought out in verse 12, verse 7. "Bring me venison and make me savoury meat that I may eat and bless thee before Yahweh." Isaac prayed to the Father in faith that the Father might confirm the blessing that he was giving on the Son. And therefore the Father used the weakness of these individuals to magnify his purpose and see that the right one got the blessing. And therefore Isaac trembled, because he knew that had it been left to him, he'd have blessed the one that was not the father's choice. And he was brought to his knees when he realized the enormity of what he was trying to do. It's brought out again in verse 27, where he says, "May Yahweh bless thee, my son." The Apostle Paul picks this up in Hebrews 11 and says, "In faith he blessed these sons." And he was absolutely staggered, brethren and sisters, that he prayed to the Father to indicate to him what he was doing and to confirm his blessing, and now he's been brought to the realization that the Father has indeed accomplished his purpose, but it's gone contrary to the will of Isaac. And Esau sees the countenance of his father. It's changed. Isaac's a broken man. He's trembling. He's afraid. And Esau heard the words of his father, and he cried with a great, exceeding bitter cry. And he said, "Father, Father, bless me. Bless me, my father. I'm here. Think of me." And you see Isaac here realizing what Esau was in the eyes of the father. Now, brethren and sisters, if faithful individuals can be weak like this, how much more us? We need to be so ready to receive the instruction and the guidance of the word. And so Isaac said, "Your brother came with subtlety, and he's taken away thy blessing." In the Greek translation of the Old Testament, the Septuagint version of the scriptures, that word subtlety is the same word that occurs in John chapter 1 and verse 47. We want to go and have a look at it. John chapter 1 and verse 47. And we read these words. "Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and saith to him, Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no subtlety, no guile." Jacob eventually became the Israelite. in whom there was no God. And the Lord Jesus is saying to Nathanael here, you're walking in the footsteps of Israel, Nathanael, keep it up. But back here in this account, Jacob has not yet reached that point in his spiritual development. And Isaac knows it. And he's upset that he's created a situation in this family that has been detrimental to the spiritual well-being of Jacob. And you can imagine how smitten in conscience Isaac is when he realizes that he's created this situation. And so in verse 36, he said, this is Esau. Is not he rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times, the double portion. Esau says, I've lost it. It's gone. He supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright. That's not right. Esau profaned his birthright and he sold it. He totally disregarded it because at that time the family was poor and there was a famine. Esau is not right when he says this. But the flesh is ever ready to accuse those that are more righteous than themselves of being unrighteous. And there's the character of Esau. He says, he took away my birthright, and now he's taken away my blessing. He said, haven't you reserved one blessing for me? You know, I'll accept the position of second born. And Isaac says, no. Verse 38, Esau said to his father, but haven't you got one father? Just one. No, Esau, nothing. There's nothing for you. And Isaac can see here's the one he loved, brethren and sisters, and he's prepared to stand up and say, son, you're not worthy of divine blessing. You're not worthy of it. And the father's showing me this. I've been brought to my knees, and I'm sorry for my attitude in the past. I've been running contrary to the things of the truth. You're not worthy of the things of God's son. And how that must have torn Isaac's heart to speak to a son like that. Brethren and sisters, how terrible it is when our children don't respond to the truth. And we've got to see them in this light, what a terrible thing it is. And you can imagine this poor old man here, absolutely heartbroken that he's got to say to his son, perhaps if he'd have said it earlier, there might have been some sort of help towards the one. We don't know. But it seems that it doesn't matter what would have happened. Esau was the sort of person that would always go contrary. He represents the seed of the serpent. But Isaac would have smitten himself as he considered the situation that he was in at this particular time. And there's Esau weeping before him, asking for but one blessing. And Isaac says, no, there's nothing from you. And those words there in verse 39, where it says, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth. In the Revised Standard Version, it says, away from the fatness of the earth. Away from it all, Esau. You've got none. You won't be in the kingdom. Your brother's got it all. By your sword you'll live. You'll serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass when thou shalt have the dominion that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. Your brother's got weaknesses. And from time to time those weaknesses will get the better of your brother. And you have the ascendancy. You've had it in the past. And of course when you see Jacob representing Israel and you see Esau representing Edom and today the whole world, you see these characteristics being brought out very, very beautifully. There are times when the Jewish people are weak and they turn away from the things of God, and Edom, the world, has the ascendancy over them. But there's going to come a time when the Jew, like Jacob, submits themselves to the word of God and the world will serve them. They'll take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew and they will say, we will go with you because we've heard that God is with you. And so verse 41, Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing. Now there's an echo of Joseph and his brethren. Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing. Because the father loved Jacob, Esau hated him. Malachi 1, verse 1. Verse 1 to 3. Yahweh says, Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. And here's Esau's hatred welling up for his brother. Look at the family situation we've got here. And there's Esau saying in his heart, here's the deceitful, scheming Esau. He will wait for his opportunity. He's a hunter. He knows how to deal with flesh, and he knows when to catch it off guard. He doesn't come out into the open. He's like the scribes and Pharisees. They do their work in the background, in the dark. They seldom come out in the open. You don't know what they're about. They're the Esau characteristics as they work within the ecclesia. And so we're told here that he's scheming. He's going to wait his opportunity. When the days of the mourning for his father is over, then I will slay my brother. He thought his father would die soon. But the father in the heavens had other ideas. And he kept Isaac alive for years to come in order that Esau might not pursue the ideals that he had in mind. And the father was going to protect Jacob as he was those others faithful in this household. So that in verse 42 we read these words. These words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah, and she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said unto him, Behold, thy brother Esau, as touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee. She calls forth, or in verse 42 here, we see the elder and the younger again, in the mind of Rebekah. And she calls Jacob to herself, and she says, Look, we're in a desperate situation now. Esau is so welled up in hatred now that he will not settle until he's killed you. What can we do about it? We're in a desperate situation. We've got to do something about this. And so, in verse 43, she says, Look, son, you'd better leave home. You'd better get out of this ecclesial situation because there's so much trouble here, it's not good for you. Get out of this situation and go. You know, and how she would have been upset about this. Here was the son she loved. And they've helped develop a situation where she's got to say to him, Look, son, go. We can't control this. Flee to Laban, my brother, to Haran. Tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury turn away. Until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him, then I will send and fetch thee from thence. She underestimated Esau. She said, Go away until Esau settles down, and then I'll call you back again. When he's changed his attitude, the Esaus never change. And she never, ever had the opportunity to send for Jacob and say it's safe to come home again. She never saw him again, this side of the kingdom, brethren and sisters, and it's heartrending when you consider that, the agony and the sorrow that was produced in this family situation. And so, verse 46, Rebekah said to Isaac, she realises she must have Isaac in on this now. He must confirm and condone what they're doing. So she comes to Isaac. Why didn't she go to him earlier? Why didn't she go to her husband earlier on the scene and tell him how she felt? Why doesn't she go to her husband and say, Look, Esau is going to kill Jacob. He represents the seed of the serpent. Isaac, we've got to do something about it. But see, she seems reluctant to go to her husband, probably because he was a meek, quiet, withdrawing sort of a man. He wasn't well. But he was a man of faith. And sisters, never consider your husbands in this light. If only she'd have gone to her husband and discussed these things. But she comes to him now and she says, I'm weary. I'm afraid Jacob might marry out of the truth. Esau's married out of the truth. He's setting a bad example within the ecclesial situation. I'm afraid that this might affect Jacob. I'm afraid that he might be lured away by the things of the world. And if that happens, what's the good of living? What's the good of our life? See, Isaac already saw this. And he was already upset by this. If you go back to chapter 26 and verse 35, it upset Isaac that Esau had married out of the truth. And Isaac could see that it was wrong. So she's coming to him and speaking to him on the basis of what she knows he agrees with. But it seems as though she's still reluctant to pour out her heart to her husband. And so Isaac brings Jacob before him in verse 1, blessed him, charged him, and said unto him, Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Chapter 28 and verse 1. So here you see the family being brought together. And Isaac takes the lead in the family situation, and probably Esau's listening to all this, because the verses follow indicate that Esau heard it all. And here's Isaac standing up in the midst of that family, and he's saying, Son, you're the one that will receive the blessing. I don't want you to do the things your brother's done. I don't want you to take of the daughters of this land. I want you to go away to that ecclesia up in Padan Aram and seek a wife from there, someone that can assist you in the things of the truth. How that must have hurt Isaac. Because, see, Abraham said to Eliezer, don't let Isaac go back into that environment. It'll be detrimental to him. That's what Abraham said to Eliezer. And here's Isaac, forced into a position where he's got to send his son into an area that he knows is weak, which his own father had forbidden him to go. You know, you see the weakness of the flesh here. And if the father left the flesh to the things of his purpose, it would play havoc with it. And so here he sends him off. And Jacob moves off. Verse 10 picks up the excitement of the moment. Jacob went out from Beersheba and he went toward Haran. Now, brethren and sisters, that's a distance of 60 miles. And Jacob took off from that household and ran. And I believe that he ran and he ran and he ran because he was terrified. He was afraid of Esau. And in this desperate situation of fear and anxiety, we see Jacob racing off away from the threat of Esau because he's afraid of the things that he's been involved in. And the father's watching all this as this man runs off that his character might be developed. And that he might realise that providing he develops a faithful attitude towards these things, he will indeed be blessed.